I'm meeting with Mr. Murtaza Mandviwala, who is, he's a chairman of Mandviwala Motors Pvt Limited. He is third generation car industry person, and his son is now going to be fourth generation car industry person. They've established that this company that you worked at, or that your family's worked at, is pretty much 90 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, they sell Suzuki's here. But the thing that I want to talk to him about, apart from a lot of other stuff, obviously, and we've already been having a great conversation today, is the book that he's published. What's it called?
Steering the Pakistani Wheel.
And this is a book that you've been writing for a while, actually. You started it back in 2008.
That's right. Things were not too good, and I seemed to have time, and I found myself with this a lot of information about our own history and our own legacy, and that kind of triggered this whole project. I wasn't a writer, wasn't an author, just went for it, and wrote a couple of chapters and then sent it to my brother, who's a professor. And he says, well, you do have a bit of a flair for writing, and go for it, and don't speak to anyone about it.
Wise words. Yeah. So why so long in gestation? Was it the research, or was it you just thinking about it, or did other things get in the way?
A bit of all, you know, other things getting in the way. I was active, still am active, and there were other things on my mind, and work-wise as well as family-wise, and I never set any target for myself. But when I started researching about the automotive landscape of Pakistan, mind you, this book is about the automotive landscape, it's not just the industry itself. I found most of it was media-related, and very few studies, and I wanted to do something which is authentic and would be a kind of a reference book, and that thought came about to me only when I started researching, and I found there's very little, only a few good studies by the academic institutions here. So that kind of motivated me more to dig in deep. So the research did take a very long time, but if you search in libraries and the internet, you do get a lot of good information. But that took a long time for me. In the process, because of the lack of data and lack of information, I decided to meet people, right? And in the process, as you can see from the book, the names are there. There are 60 people I met. 60 people from all parts of the landscape, and all segments of the motor vehicle, right from an enthusiast to pioneers of this industry. That took a very long time for me, right? And of course, as I went along, it kind of reinforced my own family's legacy. We've always been automotive people, and also. In hindsight, you think, as to why you wanted to do this, and you went about and forced yourself. I actually forced myself to do it at times. Yeah. And it was more to do with my interest in history, which I realized at a later stage that I am interested in history. And as I told you before, it was more to do with a business and economic history course I took as a university student. And thereafter doing research with the professor in documenting the history of the American railroads.
Right, yeah,
that,
yeah. yeah.
All that combined, I'm in business, right? I'm not an author, I'm not an academic, so it was hard for me. But, when you accomplish something, which I'm proud of, and people do appreciate that somebody from the business and industry is actually written a book which is now regarded as Pakistan's first business history book for any industry by most experts.
For any industry?
For any industry. People write about their pioneers, their founders, their own company, but not about the industry per se. We're still a young country in that sense.
Yeah.
So, I'm blessed. So I got it, self-published it, printed it, and I'm donating all the proceeds of the book.
Oh, you're donating all the proceeds of this
Absolutely.
Book are being donated?
Absolutely, towards three projects of mine. First one is, of course, towards some meaningful automotive training project. The second one is more to do with creating studies in the landscape with the academia. And the third one, I'm just donating the books to libraries. You know, there are 2,500 libraries in Pakistan, for your information, and most of them don't have funds. Mm. Right. So, of course, a lot of people don't read anymore.
Yes.
But nevertheless, it's a history book, and yeah, it needs to be on the shelf.
So, in fact, here is the book, and I have read the book, and it is incredible. And I'm actually really grateful to you to write this book because, like you said, there aren't any resources. And when you start to think about, you know, is there a history of automotive or cars or motoring in Pakistan? And you can't really find anything until you read this book. And there's so much that I've learned from this book about, you know, the nuances and the anecdotes and the things that you wouldn't even think about when it comes to motoring and automotive in Pakistan. So this thing goes back like 100 years to the past to look at really the early days of motoring, really the early days, in fact, right up to the present. It explores the current trends, and you even take a look at the future as well, don't you, in this book? But I want to talk first about your own family history, because like I said, you're third generation, and we've been looking at some amazing pictures of Manviwala, the company, some of the cars that they've been doing, some of the places they had, so the Avon wheels, Mazda, Land Rover, now Suzuki. Tell us a little bit about how your family got into this.
The story goes that my grandfather jumped into this business for whatever reason by introducing a bicycle. Right, 90 years back, and we found the proof of that, that he was the representative of the Runwell Cycle Company of Birmingham. And that's the only proof we have. Subsequent to that...
That's a letter that I've seen, and it's dated 1932, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. That's right. And but my father used to always say that my grandfather sold a car in exchange for a Victoria, you know. You know, one of
the horse cart things, yeah.
And he used to always humor me that, you know, he actually made the money in the resale of the Victoria, because that's where the demand was.
Right.
We are today probably the only surviving company. Of course, we've been through many cycles, business cycles. We were at lunch just now, and you know, somebody remarked that, you know, only 12% of the people in third generation survive.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
But hey, this is not true for me.
Yeah. And in fact, your son has also taken over the business as well,
he's
right?
Taken over the business. Yeah. He's been with me for about 10 years now. Mm. So he's not only a commercial-minded people, but he's a happy blend of being an enthusiast as well.
Yeah, so yeah. It's interesting that you talk about the only company that survived, and we did talk about this earlier, that one of the amazing things that I learned in your book was how you chronicled so many companies that, or so many individuals that tried to start car companies, indigenous homegrown car companies, and ultimately didn't succeed. And you also talk about the fact that you're one of the only surviving ones of that time. Why was that? What happened along the way that curtailed so many endeavors?
I think the biggest setback in our history has been the nationalization part, which was in 71. That put off a lot of the companies who were trying to make, not only assembling but going for progressive manufacturing, and had made advancement in that field. That was the big setback. It's essentially our erratic policies. You know, the government, successive governments continued with erratic policies. There was no consistent, there was no auto policy in Pakistan till the late 90s. And of course, being a developing country, and the most of the revenues coming by way of duties, custom duties for the government, against CBU vehicles, which means built-up vehicles. So the government essentially supported importation rather than localization. That was essentially another reason. So other than that, there are multiple reasons. You know, multiple reasons. People who wanted to make indigenous vehicle, there were competition issues, there was issues about scale, there were issues about being able to Pakistan always had a less of an engineering background than its neighbors.
You talk in your book about critical mass, about the fact that you could have an homegrown industry if you have, you know, so if there's reason to build engines if you have enough people who are buying the engines, that sort of thing. And, you know, since I first sort of, my first sort of time when I came to Pakistan, when I was actually aware of it, probably 83 or 84, Toyota and Suzuki were dominating the market at the time. Toyota and Suzuki pretty much still dominate the market at this time. But it's still in a little bit in flux at the moment. For example, there's a recent issue with Toyota now having to suspend production. But do you think, despite all of what's happening at the moment, is there potential for further growth? Do you think that we will see a homegrown industry here at some point?
Absolutely. I mean, we're still, you know, 15 cars per 1,000 people in terms of experts and gurus who globally, you know, this is a number which can very easily increase if the policies and all are in place and which they are now. Mm-hmm. Right, it's just setback is essentially temporary. This is not we are still amongst the 40 countries of the world manufacturing motor vehicles.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
You and I think mostly of cars, but we think about tractors and
That's
motorcycles
right, yeah.
and
yeah.
all that, we've made a lot of advancements.
And the tractor engines are made here.
Yeah, motorcycles are made here,
yeah.
all of them. And so in that sense, we've done a pretty good job of it. We've not done a very good job of marketing.
Right.
And also we've been weak in exports, which is one thing that the new policy is focusing on.
So do you imagine a time when we will see cars, not just indigenous cars, but even things like Suzuki's or Toyota's that are manufactured here being exported? For example, I know that you can buy Suzuki's in the UAE that are made in India.
Yes, one of the things, this is right-hand drive market, right? So there are limitations to export to start with. Having said that, dependent on most of the manufacturer agreements. They can't infringe in certain places, they cannot export to certain places, but Millet Tractors, for example, is exporting to many countries in Africa, right? Suzuki is exporting, if not their built-up vehicles, they're certainly exporting parts from here.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and to their other plants. Toyota has managed to export a few. We're still in an embryonic stage in terms of export, but export facilitation has come about now, right? And so many automakers have come in, you know, 9 have already started, have already set up shop from China in the last 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Korean companies have come in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
after... What are some European companies? I think Peugeot or Renault were looking at it.
Peugeot is already here.
Right.
They've not started assembling as such. You know, because of the potential of the market, you know, global automakers find this as a growth potential market,
mm-hmm.
right? So everybody has a show of hands,
yeah.
right? Of course, some will not survive and some will. But that's the way of the world.
What are the unique aspects of driving here and the demands of motorists here that, for example, have meant that Toyota and Suzuki have been like the mainstay of this market? What's the driving factors behind that?
The driving factor is more historical rather than anything else because they set up shop here. They have a much larger distribution network. From a consumer point of view, obviously price is a price conscious market, you know, whether we like it or not. We still have a long way to go to be able to indigenize and localize to be able to get the price down. We have a currency serious problem right now.
Yes.
So it would be not a nice time for me to comment on that. But having said all that, you know, being now a student of history,
yeah.
There is, you know, there's huge potentials.
Yeah.
Huge potential for all, you know, right from passenger cars to all kinds of motor vehicles here.
As when we were talking earlier, and I was talking to you about the fact that, you know, coming in here in the 80s, and I did drive cars here. I rented cars and I drove cars. The last two times I've been here, I've not driven. Because I've looked at the roads and I'm like, I'm kind of put off A, by the conditions of the road, and B, by the very erratic behavior of drivers, shall we say. Can we see some improvement in that? Are you seeing that? Is there any way to help that or move that along to develop that further?
It's a transformation, you know, of our not only our culture but driving habits. It's going to take up quite some time. Motorcyclists tend to be all over the place. There's very little driver training in Pakistan. There's a bit of a licensing issue. Now,
actually mention in the book, don't you? There's like only one in five people don't actually have a license who are driving.
That's true. Yeah. But having said all that, and your concerns about the roads and the erratic driving, and it's more to do with the principal cities of Pakistan, and specifically Karachi.
Right.
But Karachi, there is an issue, right? But if you go to the smaller cities and towns, and you go and see the road network of Pakistan, it's pretty good actually.
Oh.
And I've compared this with our neighbors as well. The book compares Pakistan with its neighboring countries, and we're not that far behind, as you know, most people would not know.
Yeah. Maybe I need to take a tour of other places. I think next time I'm here, that's what I need to do. Let's move to the future. And one thing that's happening around the world, and something that I'm very aware of operating in the UK, is obviously the advent of concerns over the environment and the advent of EVs and electric cars. It feels to me like we're very far from that here. Or do you think that could happen quite quickly?
We should keep a close watch on this. A lot of EV work has been going. You know, there was a Lahore Auto Show last week, and you could find a lot of companies introducing various EV type solutions. Right? We still have a long way to go in the sense that we don't have an infrastructure for electric vehicles. We don't have any subsidy or cash back or anything of the sort for the consumer. We do have a duty structure which favors electric vehicles, but until the size of the battery and the cost of the battery is reduced, countries like Pakistan, and for that matter most developing countries, will find it hard to keep up pace with the developing countries for alternate motor vehicles other than gasoline or diesel. The interim period, most people, even in the UK I'm told, are suggesting hybrid as a solution, and most automakers here are also working towards hybrid. That will happen sooner, and perhaps any other solution, whether it be it EV or any other solution, will also happen.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about my last visit here, and to an extent this one as well, is the real advent of car culture, you know, and the classic car culture, motorsports culture. There's a lot of new cars here, a lot of people enjoying their cars. You yourself, I think, are restoring was it Pontiac, right?
Yeah, it's a 1948 Pontiac Silver Streak with an automatic transmission, by the way. When I drive that car, first of all, I find it difficult to drive that car in this traffic, and you know,
it's a big beast.
And you have to keep on pumping the brakes, you know, so you're not used to it, right? The good thing is that when you drive that car, and you know, you're talking about how people are enthusiastic and appreciative of old cars and stuff like that. Every time I go in this car, people will not look, you know, if I'm driving a Mercedes, people may look the other, you know, a different way. But here, they'll sort of probably give a thumbs up every time I pass by.
So just to wrap up then, are you optimistic about the future?
Absolutely, certainly. From the automotive perspective, absolutely very optimistic. We are still, like I said, we are amongst the 40 countries of the world. So we have the, you know, a strong base now. We have a very strong base, and given that the policies are also now in place, there's a lot of research has started creeping into the automakers realize that they need something which is suiting our environment and culture, so they've also started working on it. So things will happen, certainly.
That's awesome. And also, you've got the bug a little bit, haven't you? Because you're working on something else now, aren't you?
Look, once again, I'm not an author, and let's see. Maybe next time I'll give you more information.
That would be awesome. So tell everybody, where can they get this book? Because it's awesome, and you must have, if you have any interest in car culture around the world, you definitely need to check this out. Where can people find this?
Right now, all bookstores in Pakistan, all the bookstores who are selling books in English. Of course, online it's available. It's also available in Amazon USA. As,
right.
But international distribution, I'm going to start, and
right.
Inshallah, it'll be available everywhere.
Awesome. Fantastic. Murtaza, thank you so much. It's been an absolute
thank
pleasure
so
to
much.
Meet you and to talk to you.
And great guy. I mean, I really enjoyed talking to him earlier as well. You know, doing a fantastic job.
You're too kind. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
A big shout out and thanks to Jay Williams over at Air Technic, who are top tier sponsors of Brown Car Guy. Check them out at airtechnic.co.uk for exhausts, brakes, suspension and body kits. Plus our other major sponsor, Neogen Solutions. Much appreciation also to tier 4 sponsors, Muhammad Ali Humaid, Tom Conway Gordon and Reza Adil. And of course all these other guys who supporting on Patreon. Brown Car Guy is eternally grateful. Hey, think about joining them over at patreon.com Brown Car Guy. If you can't, don't worry. Just make sure you're subscribing to the YouTube channel and website. Plus follow on social media by searching for Brown Car Guy.